And welcome to Late to the Party, episode 17. This is the Geeks Unleashed Book Club podcast, in addition to our weekly podcast, where we go through what's considered some of the essential graphic novels of our time. So for this episode 17, we are covering, based on our past couple of weeks of film watching from Fox, their version of Earth, what is it, 70, 701, 306? Daredevil from 2003 and Elektra from 2005. So we decided, why not just go ahead and do Daredevil, The Man Without Fear. So that is our episode today.
Just to introduce ourselves, I'm Mark.
I'm Jasmine.
And we're joined this week by...
Link. Hi, everybody.
So Link joined us last year when we did Fantastic Four Full Circle and asked him to come back again. And there you go.
Okay, so first appearances. Daredevil's first appearance was in Daredevil number one from April of 1964. The character was created by Stan Lee and Bill Everett with a lot of help from Jack Kirby.
And for this graphic novel miniseries, the graphic novel consisted of five issues, written by Frank Miller. Pencils and cover art were by John Romita Jr. Letterer was Joe Rosen, inks by Al Williamson, and the colorist was Christy, I think it's Shelley, maybe? Something like that.
I'm going to go Shell.
Yeah. Shell.
Probably. Anyway, right, well, let's just get into it. So I'm really curious, Link, in regards to what your familiarity is actually with Daredevil. I got the feeling from our conversations before recording that you're quite familiar with this period of time, but just weird. What's your background on with Daredevil?
I've always been aware of Daredevil as a kid. I had like a few select comics here and there, but I was more of like a team-based guy. Like I was always X-Men or like something. It seemed like more bang for your buck, you know. Instead of a book with one cool character, I can get a book with seven cool characters. So you know, I kind of, the only solo character I really followed was like Batman and later Iron Man. Spider-Man, I always respected. You know, Daredevil was the same way, but this was actually my first like Daredevil story I read in its entirety. I saw the movie before. I read this when in 2006, I was just graduating high school and Civil War was coming out, and that kind of opened me up to the idea of really expanding my horizon beyond X-Men. And my comic shop had the issues sitting there. Like they had them for a few years, just sitting there in like a pack for like 10 bucks. But I was always like a dollar bin warrior. I was in high school. You know, money was scarce. So once again, bang for your buck. And so I finally pulled the trigger on this, you know, and admittedly, I've read Bendis's Daredevil. I haven't read all of Brubaker's. There's some gaps in my tenure with Daredevil, but I almost want to say it's because this is like the perfect Daredevil story. You know, it's really hard to top this. I wish I would have read this before I saw the movie, actually, because you know this book is too. I mean, if you've seen the show, if you've seen the movie, you can see what they pulled from in this book and how influential it is. So I've always wanted to. It's sorry, that's a random rant, but I've always wanted. I regret seeing the movie before I read this. But yeah, that is my history on Daredevil.
That's amazing. No, there's actually some similarities there. What about you, Jasmine?
Nope. My first introduction to Daredevil, unfortunately, was Ben Affleck in 2003. And then I did not touch Daredevil again until Netflix.
Ooh.
So this is your first actual comic book, isn't it? Of
Daredevil? This is absolutely my first Daredevil comic. Like, I've never even read any kind of crossover with Daredevil in any of the other comics that I've read. So this was my very first foray into the Daredevil world. Glad it was this one, because like Steph said, I think this is a really fantastic origin story.
That's actually quite interesting. I think so. I've got some similarities. That my first Daredevil was the movie with Ben Affleck, and I remember saying when we did the movie review about two or three weeks ago, I walked out of there really like trying to force my mind to love it. how can I convince myself to love this film I was so hyped for? Anyway, and then I didn't get into Daredevil as a comic until they did Marvel Knights, and I picked up Kevin Smith's run, and then carried on all through Bendis's run. And I think I did drop off when Brubaker jumped on, and not because of Brubaker, just I don't know, stuff happened, I guess, life probably, and I ended up jumping off. Daredevil is a comic I've always wanted to go back to, and I sold, unfortunately, my run, but I've been slowly picking up that Marvel Knights run again. Unfortunately, there was some hype around Echo, which prevented me from getting some holes, but I'm hoping that will fizzle down now, and they're a bit cheaper. So, and I read most of that run, and I haven't done much else, if I'm honest. So this has been the first Daredevil comic that I've read in quite some time. So, just thought I'd go around the room and just a summary of what our thoughts were. But yeah, no, actually, I'm keen, Jasmine, as a first Daredevil comic, what were your thoughts on this miniseries?
I like that I had background knowledge on the characters from the movies and the Netflix show. So like when they came on, like I was shocked at this version of Elektra. Like I had never, ever, ever seen this version of Elektra before. Like she was straight up psychotic. And I was like, if they had done this Elektra in the movie, that might've been a hell of a lot better than like what we got. So that one was really interesting because it was completely different than any version of Elektra that we've seen. But it was like really cool. It was like Kingpin and just kind of seeing the characters that I'm familiar with based on other forms of media. But I did enjoy it. I thought this version of the origin of Daredevil was a lot tighter, and it was a better telling of what happened to him as a kid to get him to the point that he's at. And I think it really kind of gave you what that first film in 2003 was missing. Like everything happened so fast in that movie that you never had that chance to build up any kind of rapport or like feelings of like, I really want this kid to win. Like there just wasn't time for that. But reading this version, like you really feel for Matt really early on in that first issue. And it's just like, once you get hooked on Matt, like getting his revenge, then it's just like, it's so much easier to kind of follow the story as it goes on. So I really like that it hooked you immediately. Some of my favorite scenes in the whole book are in that first issue, first and second issue. So like especially that don't judge me, people, but like when the kid is literally taking revenge on the people who killed his father, I was like, this is amazing. And I'm like, Jasmine, you're rooting for a kid to go and murder people. And I was like, I don't care, this is amazing. I loved that entire like revenge sequence of him seeking out all of those guys and taking each one of them down. Like that was really awesome to me.
What about you, Link? What about you? So when did you? Cause you read this previously, didn't you? In high school.
Yeah, I read this. I'm coming out of high school. Is that that's the question?
My question is like sort of your summary of the book. But I know me and Jasmine, it's our first reading of it.
This is like the definitive tale for Daredevil for me. I think it still holds up well. That reading this, like Jasmine said, I don't hate the movie. I'm not as down on it, I get, as other people. But reading this, you realize what the movie was lacking. Like Jasmine said, you can't build a rapport for Matt in that movie because it just looks cool. It's action scenes. You know, they don't take the time. Like in this book, like it goes out of its way. Like you feel like you're with Matt the entire ride through, you know, through all of his throws. So this is, you know, not to me, just like the definitive Daredevil tale, but I almost feel like it's one of the best definitive origin superhero stories there is, you know, and that's a hard thing to do. But it's crazy that I don't know why they rejected this. You know, I know Frank Miller initially developed this as like a pitch for like a show or a movie. And for whatever reason, it didn't follow through. But it's, you know, reading this, you got to wonder, like, why? I mean, were we not there budget-wise? Maybe. But this is really a very simple story. You know, it's not really big theatrics or like, this could have been done. You know, it's a shame. It took so long for them to really, I guess, visualize it with the Netflix Daredevil series. But yeah, I think this is a fantastic just book all the way around. This is the type of book that's like, yeah, this is why I read comics, you know, like this is one of those rare things. It's like, it's universal. Like people who aren't into comics can read this and like, yeah, that's a good piece of work, you know? But yeah, I just, this is a fantastic story all the way around.
I love that what you just said, that this is why I read comics. I felt like the same myself when I was reading it. I thought, how have I taken so long? So I read this for the first time this week, and I thought, how have I taken so long to ever pick this up? And I've heard about Frank Miller's run on Daredevil and how essential it is, and I know that he's written many other issues of Daredevil. But for me, this was an amazing origin story. And if you think about when the first issue of Daredevil came out in 1964, we would have got the accident. And I mean, I haven't read that first issue, but stereotypical of comics that came out in the 60s was that by the last page, the character would be in costume and ready to go. And then issue two onwards would be kind of the stereotypical superhero stories. This style of writing and origin was something that's evolved, and, you know, we get a little bit more nuance now, and as creators like to go and tell their own tale. But people are aware that the audience is much more intelligent, I think. So, and they can handle bigger form stories. And I don't know, when I was reading it, I just really enjoyed it. I found it like simple, easy to read. You know, when you compare someone like Tom King, who's just so over the top with his descriptions, I just found this was just so on point. I felt Frank Miller just handled the narration of this story so masterfully. And I just really was enjoying it. And I was like, oh, I want it to end. And I was like, but I love that it didn't rush. And I can see the inspiration this has had on many other things. I just felt like a bit like Batman Begins, the TV, obviously the Daredevil show. And I just really appreciate what this legacy has had on other people. But no, I honestly really loved it. I thought it was almost one of those real masterpiece graphic novels. And you just think, I wish more people would pick up comics and they'd see things they're missing. So,
but I felt the same way. I thought this was very Batman-esque. And that's like one of the first times I've read any other comic and felt like, damn, like, are you friends with Bruce? Do you guys know each other? Because it has that vibe to it. But it doesn't feel like a copy or anything like that, but it definitely has Batman origin story vibes.
The grit to it. And you know what's wild is that Frank Miller, you know, debatably, like Moon Knight, Daredevil share aspects of Batman, but Daredevil is considered like Marvel's Batman. But Frank Miller wrote a definitive origin for Batman with Year One. And then he does like a classic definitive origin for Marvel's version of Batman, which is not to discredit him or not give him his respect. Matt's his own man, but you know, he comes over and gives it for Daredevil. So I thought that's very interesting and cool.
He's a poor man's Bruce Wayne.
Do you know what? That's really weird, because when early in the first issue, when he has the accident, and people come and obviously the dad's threatening to sue them. And they're like, well, you can't sue us because we know all the dodgy stuff you're doing. And I was like, imagine they had sued and suddenly Daredevil, Matt Murdock got a load of cash in. Could he have been Bruce Wayne? I mean, it wouldn't have been Bruce Wayne, Bruce Wayne, but he could have walked away with a couple of mils. Someone, you know, you lose your eyesight. That's got to be worth a lot of money.
Stick would have been his Alfred almost, you know?
Yeah.
That would have been interesting.
A different way it could have gone down. Maybe if they do a what if. What if Daredevil was rich? This is something I'm always sort of curious about. How did everybody read it? So, actually, Jasmine, should we start with you?
I'm always the digital girl. I
Yeah.
am. I like have pared down the things that I buy, and like I have to love it if I have if I'm gonna keep a hard copy at this stage. So,
Understand.
I was digital. Plus, it was part of Kindle Unlimited, and I already have a Kindle Unlimited subscription, so it was super easy.
So why
Yeah.
not? I want to come to the thing last because I know how he got his. And I just ordered a graphic novel of the series. And I'll be honest, after I've read this, I immediately went onto eBay. I haven't done it, but I have Googled to see what single issues might cost because I was curious. Because that's how much actually I love this. So I was like, I really wouldn't mind knowing how much it would cost me to buy the single issues. So I only have this. I literally got it a couple of days ago and I read it and I finished it today. But Link, how did you get yours or read yours?
Yeah, I got mine in floppies. And I was saying a little bit earlier that it was a civil war around the 2006, around that time. But my comic shop they would put like these storylines. I had a really good comic shop growing up. Sadly, they're not around anymore. But it's like I didn't realize how good they were until like in hindsight when I dealt with many other comic shops since then. But they would like put keys in dollar bins and stuff. I didn't know their keys at the time were significant. I just thought they were cool comics. But they would put like these significant comic runs, package them together. Instead of you trying to find particular issues or find one issue in the dollar bin and the other issues in like the other boxes that I don't know what you would call those. But they're not dollar comics. But
Well, yeah, no, I mean, yeah.
they would put them in packaging for a decent little price, and it's like I had seen this Man Without Fear for it was like $10, and I'd seen that for like 2 years. It was like 2004 when I noticed it, and I just kept putting it off, because I was an X-Men guy, but I'd always heard about it. But once again, single guys weren't really or single heroes weren't really my thing, and I took a chance on it after I was really I was getting into film a lot, and Last Stand had come out a few months earlier, and so I was on the superhero kick where I was like, Daredevil really wasn't that bad when it came out a few years ago. And so, I was like, let me see. And I had heard people say how it was inspired by Man Without Fear. So I was like, let me finally read the source of this movie. And but yeah, I ended up buying it in my comic shop, the floppies. And it's what I've had ever since. Anytime I read it, that's what I pull out. I'm not opposed to like trades or digital, but if it's like if I have the floppies, I like let me utilize them. But
Yeah.
I can't usually.
Come on, you
Have
gotta
you
show him. You gotta show
All right, now.
Yeah.
You can get let's have a look. Yeah.
All
So obviously
right.
we put the audio on the podcast, but the video is on YouTube for anyone that wants to watch it.
This is let me make sure I got it in my order. This is issue one. Sorry for the ring light.
That's a really cool looking reflective cover. I like that one.
Is that
Yeah.
foil?
Yes, and it's emboiled too. Like
Oh, okay.
it's nice. It's beautiful. This is in issue two,
Oh, wow.
Electra.
That one's cool.
Yeah, that's cool. I'm gonna have to consider getting these single issues, I think.
They're worth it. They're worth it, man. It's like you said. It's one of those. Or like we were saying earlier, it's one of those things where you're like, this is why I read comics, it feels like a great work of art.
Ooh, that one's really cool. The issue four with Kingpin.
Yeah.
Like that one.
Last but not least, we get Matt and his mustard and ketchup.
Oh yeah. Yeah, his yellow costume, yeah.
That's so cool.
Thank you.
Before we move on, actually, do you know what? When I was reading this, I'm not saying that Frank Miller is the same writer level as Jeff Loeb or anything like that, but it gave me this remember reminded me, sorry, of that a series that Jeff Loeb used to do with Tim Sale, or the color series, and Daredevil Yellow, and there was Spider-Man Blue, and there was Captain America something or other, and but yeah, and it just reminded me of that little time in comics when they went back and told a tale you didn't know. I thought that's what this was a little bit like. So, right.
No, interesting about that is that I, after reading Man Without Fear, I was going through Yellow, and they always kind of reminded me of each other because I knew they were kind of both origin stories or tales from yesteryear. Obviously, Frank Miller is a little bit more grittier than Jeff Loeb, but there's a distinct difference in the books is that Matt's like a grown man when his dad dies in Daredevil Yellow, as opposed to being like a young child. And I thought that was an interesting difference, you know, like, yeah. I don't know, I feel like a lot of weight, like, in him losing his father as a young boy, he's blind. Like, there's a scene in there that kind of tripped me out in Man Without Fear. It's like, when his dad dies and they ask him to go identify his body, it's like, how?
Yeah, how? Exactly.
Face, you know, so it's like, that just was more heavy on me than like like Matt was, I think, already in law school or about to go to law school when his dad died in Daredevil Yellow. So I thought that change was different. Or it was weirded me out. Sorry, I can't find the word.
That's fine.
Well, I thought that was really gruesome because like they beat him to the point where he didn't have any teeth, and then they shot him in the face. Like, what exactly is he identifying? Because there was not much there to identify.
Right. It's heavy, man.
Yeah, you see that the feet with the tag, and then he's like, looks like he's about 12 or something. No 12-year-old would ever be allowed to see that. Well, so, and should never be allowed to see that.
Yeah.
So as we said, this is a comic, graphic novel. And no comic or graphic novel was ever really a comic or graphic novel without the art. So John Romita Jr., I'd love to hear, Steph, what do you think about the artwork?
Masterclass, man. Like, there's, it's not, a lot of people like to give John Romita Jr. flack nowadays. You know, he's not what he once was, understandably, but it's like, when people clown him like that, or Frank Miller, it's like, I feel like they've not read the, like, I don't know, for me, it's like, because I've experienced this, I can never joke around with JRJR because I know what he's capable of. This is a career highlight for me personally. I feel like if I say this is the best stuff he did, it's like discrediting him because he did some great stuff later on, but this is some of my favorite artwork from JRJR. It feels very reminiscent of Frank Miller, almost, like his style. Like it has like Sin City qualities to it. You know, I would say he was already influenced by manga in a sense, or like the anime look. Like, he does the very over exaggerated stuff, but it's not really. He does that more so now, but it's not really on display here. It's very subtle, but I don't know. He just does some phenomenal work. Like, there's this panel of what issue was it? It's like Matt's face, and he's a kid, but it's like a giant just facial profile, and it's like the shadowing and like how he draws the lips and stuff. It's next level, man. Like, it's, you know, once again, it's, and when people clown on JRJR, it's like, you guys have most never, you know, experienced a Man Without Fear, because man's he's a master, you know. From a master class family, but once again, like, this is just a book in all aspects. It's like, this is why you read comics, from like the Frank Miller's writing to like, you nailed it with the inner narration. Like, it's on point. It's not too much, not overly verbose. It's, you know, it's just enough. He's like, get to the girl, you know, unload. It's like, that's how people narrate to themselves. You know, it's not this full long exposés, but the art is up right up there. Like, this art, you know, it's just beautiful. Like, I'm rambling a lot, my bad, but it feels like
it's fun.
Really lived in book. Like, when he does like the cityscapes and all that stuff, like, it's, you know, it feels very realized or self-realized. And, you know, you don't get that on a lot of books. So it's just top notch on all levels.
Yeah. What, Jasmine, what about yourself?
Oh no, I'm gonna bring it down. it's very detailed, and I did like that. And I also really liked the colorist touch on it. But this is not a style that I really appreciate. Because I think that the characters are ugly, and I don't like it when the characters are ugly. That's as superficial as I can get with the art. But no, I thought it was very expressive. And again, I really love the colorist touch on it. There's so much detailing, like the cityscapes, you can see stuff inside the windows, like you can see inside the cars that are driving, like there's so much detail. So it's a lot to look at. Like it's a visual treat, but like, as far as me enjoying it from my personal Jasmine perspective, like did not enjoy it. I thought, plus I was very disoriented. This is the very first time that I had seen Matt Murdock as blonde. And so it took a long time for my movie brain and my Netflix brain to like accept that Matt Murdock was blonde. So it took me like 3 issues before I was like, right, that's Matt. So,
this panel right here, just like his layouts with like space and room, like my man's drew all that, you know, like bed, the sheets, the tiles, the little.
It shows so much of their personalities too, because Matt's side of the room is so clean and Foggy's side of the room is just a nightmare.
Even, you know, just I love what he does with like just trees, you know, like cityscapes like that. Like, I get it though. Now, it is a very acquired taste, but I feel like for JRJR's style, because I know that's not for everybody, I feel like this is him at the top of his game for his particular style.
With Steph, I enjoyed this. I thought like John Romita Jr., this is probably the height of his career, in honesty. I've read many things since, I wasn't reading comics in 93. I think I came into comics, actually it was a year later I came into comics in 94, I think. But I'm mainly familiar with his work during Amazing Spider-Man. I think Amazing Spider-Man is where I'm most familiar. I've read other things that he's been in, obviously mainly Spider-Man related stuff, but I know he shows up here and there. And to be honest, I think he's probably illustrated most Marvel comics at some point. So I went into this fully aware of his style of artwork, and I'm happy with it. I think I don't love it on everything I read him on, but I really loved it in this. I thought this was really good. I think it's quite, because it's dark and it's gritty and the detail and everything really suited the tone of the story. And I'm with you. Like I just actually highlight, I've got this panel here it's difficult to see, but I can't really see it. I can't see it because my background. Hold on a minute. Let me turn my background off for a minute. Hold on.
We're having technical difficulties.
No, look, see this background here where Daredevil is all in the black costume and he's fighting all these people. And just all the bodies, but all of the detail from just like their hands on the ground and everything. I just thought it was amazing. And this bit here. And
I love that one.
I have to give real credit to the colorist as well. But I just think these scenes as well, where Daredevil's doing flips over the buildings. When you have that running parallel with the narration, and then when you move to this 9-panel grid where you see Daredevil flipping over all the buildings, it's really narrating his senses as he's moving across these buildings, where he's starting to pick up that whiff of Elektra's perfume and her scent and her breath and everything like that. I just think it's amazing. The artwork fits so beautifully when it's the writing, the sort of the minimal narration. Frank Miller's trust in the relationship he's got with John Romita Jr. And I don't know, I really enjoyed the style of it. I think it's great. I think he handles it well, and I think it's, like you say, it's a masterpiece in just and the
I'll say
collaboration.
Though, I love this cover, like the way that Daredevil looks on this cover that's behind me. If you're watching on YouTube, this is a fantastic cover. Like it is so simple, but it gives you so much information about this character. Like this guy looks like a badass. Like I, even if I had never picked up a Daredevil book before, like this guy looks like I don't want the business. Like, I'm good, man. I'm fine. I don't want to mess with you. So I really, really do love the cover work that he did. Just like the profile, like this is quintessential superhero look, right? So like Daredevil in costume, I loved. And I think I would probably like more of those issues, like when Daredevil is actually Daredevil. but again, it's just like, I was just not a fan of that particular style of like people. I didn't enjoy the people style.
Did you like the black jumpsuit ninja look?
Yes, because it reminded me so much of Charlie Cox. there was one sequence that really felt like that hallway sequence in the Netflix series. So that was definitely really cool. But I did love the acrobatics, like the motion in the artwork. I loved like all of the motion, all of the flips, all of the fighting. I loved the way that all of those things played out. I really did.
Agree.
Oh, amazing. So I wanted to touch on the story and the structure. So it's 5 issues. And what one of the things I personally loved about the 5 issues was that each individual issue is like a moment in Matt's time of his life, going from being a child to the final page of becoming Daredevil. And I love that this origin story didn't rush the Daredevil moment, that we were getting it gradually. So obviously the first issue focused on his accident and his father's death, and then issues 2 and 3 have Elektra, and then in issue 4 we get introduced to the Kingpin, and then the 5th issue is quite action-packed. We've got the young girl Mickey, and there's a big action moment which leads to even Daredevil getting arrested at a certain point. But I just thought it'd be good to have a chat around what people actually think of the story and the structure and how well it's paced. So Link, do you want to go first?
I think it was brilliantly paced. Like you said, it kind of narrates over a different, not too many different stages in Matt's life, but it kind of shows him going through law school a little bit, or like how that gets set up. Sorry, this is bugging me. I want to say this is. Remember in the movie, the Ben Affleck movie, Kingpin was actually the one that killed Matt Murdock's father when he was a young man working his hired muscle. When you guys read this book, did you think that a huge dude in the group at first was Kingpin?
No.
But then when Matt ended up, it wasn't, because Matt ended up like snapping his leg. Remember, he's like,
yeah.
I just think that was Kingpin at first. Like,
no, because he wasn't dressed like it. Like, Kingpin was always super sharp. And like, as soon as I saw that guy, I was like, "Oh, he can't be like
you." Before he lost his hair, you know, and I kind of was like, I felt like they had read that comic, and that was like the inspiration for the Michael Clark Duncan part movie where he was Kingpin's murderer.
I didn't get that impression. I felt like when we first saw Kingpin, that's when we first saw Kingpin. So like, I didn't feel there was an alluding to him. It was just suddenly he comes out from the shadows and sort of breaks that guy's neck.
How do you feel about that whole thing with Kingpin in the movie being the murder of Matt Murdock's father? Is it too extra? Is it any worse than Sandman?
I think it's trying to tie everything together when it doesn't need to necessarily tie everything together. I just think...
I would say, like, there would never have been a reason for someone like Kingpin to do that kind of dirty work himself. Mm-hmm. Like, when he snapped that guy's neck in the comics, it was a meeting of the heads of the families, right? So, like, this was all those super important crime families in the city. Like, anybody else is beneath him. Like, I could never imagine someone like Kingpin actually going to a dodgy alleyway to, like, put the final touch on someone. Like, that just doesn't seem like anything.
You don't think he could have like started off as like hired muscle and worked his way up, you know?
Oh, yeah, that probably is it. No one walks in and they're suddenly in charge. I do imagine that most heads of organizations had to start somewhere. I mean, unless you're born into it and you're like the son, you know, if Kingpin had a son, Kingpin's son isn't going to be working the corners. He's going to be with that. So that's where you obviously have the closer knit family. But you know, from I don't know that much about Kingpin's origin other than what I saw in the Charlie Cox TV series, and I can't remember.
Or in Into the Spider-Verse.
I can't remember the Bendis' run now from that long ago now to if they did show any of Kingpin's origins or anything. But from what I'm aware of in the TV show, he'd come from sort of a poverty background. And that gives me the thoughts that he would have worked his way up. So whether that was in the Daredevil movie or this Daredevil by Frank Miller, I don't know. I don't know how he would have got to being the head of an organization like he has. But he must have always been fairly ruthless.
Always.
Yeah.
The only way he rose to power. That's my feeling. Like the way that D'Onofrio played him in the Netflix series, that version of Kingpin is the kind of guy that does what happened in this comic book. He walked into a room with a whole bunch of people that were way above his pay grade, and he picked out the biggest bad person in the bunch and snuffed him out in front of everybody. And everybody else was like, oh shit, like we have to make this guy, you know? So I think he's psychotic enough that, and of course he has that huge stature. Like that's also very intimidating and very hard to compete with. I really think that Kingpin was just one of those guys that observed enough. And when he finally felt like he knew how everything else worked, he just went and took his shot. And after that, everybody was like, okay, dude, we'll listen. I'll listen to you.
Let's see that. Sorry, guys.
I got the impression as well that that they had a close relationship. Because he was like, oh, there's those big hands, I know. And that also just shows me, like, his loyalty is just none.
Himself.
I think from what I'm aware of, and again, it is a bit TV series influenced, but people like Wesley and his wife, clearly there's loyalties. And that interpretation would have been taken, I think, from the comics. And I would imagine he has loyalties to a select few. Mm-hmm. But other than that, it's the game is on, I think. So, but no, I don't know whether or not, I don't think that was him that killed his father. And I don't see necessarily that in any story you write that should everything connect. I don't see that the biggest villain should also have to have had an impact on the hero's life earlier on. I don't know that, why does that have to always happen? So in some ways, I quite like when you hear about Batman was killed by his parents were killed by some random guy. It doesn't. Yeah, I know that there have been different interpretations where it was the Joker. I don't think that's the way to go. I think having it been an unknown person, I think for me is a much better part of Daredevil or any superhero's origin. You know, I hate it when you find out that their big villain actually also had an impact earlier on in their life, and 20 or 30 years later, they're then having to do fights in alleyways or on rooftops. It's so unlikely. but I don't know. I know some writers like to have that there's some link to their past, but I don't see it's always necessary. I think there's something
to a long game, but I think that kind of long game is better suited for short media. Like that's a better film. That's not something that needs to be in a comic series, because comics change so rapidly. They change writers, they change all of these things. Like if you're going to do something like that with those kinds of implications, that needs to be a film or a TV series, not a comic, because then it's like, well, did you read so-and-so's run? And did you read this other run that's not related to the first, you know, like there's just too much that could be retconned if you put it in a comic, I think.
But no, yeah, just to obviously come back here, I love that. Come back to this, obviously the structure of this. I love that each issue focuses on a kind of like a moment in time of his life. I think the first issue is clearly set very, very early on, sort of, I don't know, between 10 and 15. But then the rest of it are adulthood. And you can see the real shift in his priorities. You know, Elektra waves her hair and suddenly he's off going 90 miles an hour and almost, you know, jumping off a cliff to towards the end, talking about building a firm with Foggy and becoming much more sensible. So I loved seeing that evolution that we got. I don't know. I thought the story was told so well over those 5 issues. I don't know. I just really loved what we got, and I loved how he put the structure together. It was a really good origin story, if I'm honest. Told really, I think smooth is the best way I'd put across this. So.
I love the narration in here because it kept the word bubbles small enough that mm-hmm. The flow of this was very easy to follow. It did not, because there are some graphic novels that you read and you're just like, God, this is so wordy. Like V for Vendetta is super wordy. Like it's a really heavy theme in general, but like V for Vendetta is extremely wordy. But this one, the way that they did the narration, I absolutely loved it. That the after he goes to the party where Elektra is, and then he gets shot and he's trying to get back to his dorm, and he keeps repeating over and over again, like, clean the wound, stay conscious, get back to the dorm, stay conscious, like, mm-hmm. do this, stay conscious. And it's like a whole 2 pages of him reminding himself to stay conscious. And I think because we got that kind of narration, it was so easy to be in Matt's head, like, throughout this entire book. Like it was just so easy to follow along. You never got confused as to who was speaking or what was happening. And then that same thing is kind of repeated in the last issue when he's trying to get Mickey back and he's like, sure. I don't want to kill you, let her go. Like I really don't want to kill you, man, let her go. Like I don't want to kill you, let her go. And it's just like, I love that so much. I thought that was such a testament to the character himself, but also it was so like considerate of the reader to, instead of having this like ridiculous monologuing that takes 7 pages of monologue, you have tiny little narration boxes instead of the word bubbles, where it's just like you get to be in his head but you don't lose the momentum of reading the action. So the way that kind of all plays together with everything else, I think that is what stands out the most about this book, is that you are in Matt's head, therefore it's so much easier for you to like, with like, this was such a page turner because it was just like, you better let that girl go, man, you're gonna die. There's just no question in my mind, you know.
I think this is brilliant. This whole miniseries is great. So did you review any final favorite moments throughout the miniseries?
Jasmine said earlier, I'm a big fan of the first issue, just like when it opens up with the cityscape of Matt just chilling on the railing or whatever, and it's right off the bat you kind of know what you're getting into with that layout or the establishment of that. I mean the whole book was a highlight, like you said, the acrobatics, like the action, the panels, so frame by frame in this. There's one where Elektra and Matt are in that little red Corvette, and you know, he like Elektra like swerves off, and like I think she hops out, but she like swerves and like it hops out, but it's like it's so fluid, you could see that happening as like a movie treatment or something. Like it was meant to be like what do they call that when they storyboard it almost seemed like a storyboard, you know. But there's just, so the whole book, man, a cool moment, the one that really tickles me is that towards the end when Matt's telling the dude, let her go, he doesn't listen, dude pops a shot off and Matt's just like fa-ting! And ricochets.
Oh, yeah.
It's ice cold.
Yeah.
What about you, Jasmine?
So, yeah, I loved the kid getting revenge at the beginning. That was definitely a favorite. I loved when Matt and Elektra go skiing, and there's like a 2-page spread of like them skiing. I also really, really liked in one of the earlier issues, I think it was issue 2, there is a sequence, it's a double page spread of Stick and Matt jumping across buildings, but they both look so super acrobatic and cool, like doing that. I love that little sequence too. And then I did like all of the fighting at the end, like just the flips, the twists, the like the guy that was listening to music, and Matt has just beat the crap out of everybody behind him before the guy ever turns around. Like, so once we got into like the really, really big fight sequences, I love those too. But I'm always a fan of like really well done fight choreography. And I think that applies to graphic novels as well. Like sometimes fight sequences just look too crowded, but the way these are presented, it's very clean. It's easy to follow. That was like, there's so much detailing in the imaging, but it's still very easy to follow. Like nothing gets lost. You don't get lost while you're reading the book and then forget like where your eyes are supposed to go. So even though there's a lot of stuff happening, it still feels very, very linear. So I really did enjoy that.
There was, what you just made me remember, Jasmine, there was one scene I did like in particular when it was Matt and Elektra. You know, they're getting to know each other, but it's like them by like a campfire. It's just a really charming little scene. Like, you know, I think J.R. J.R. does a great job at conveying how Matt lets his guard down around Elektra. Like for the most of the book, he's always got like this stern, not stern, but he seems very, you know, the emotions in his face. And you could tell that he's at the infatuation stage of a relationship. You know, it's everything's new and exciting. And I think that it was conveyed pretty well in the small panels that he showed it in. So thank you, Jasmine, for helping me with that.
I was going to say one of my favorite, look, I love it all. I think it's brilliant. There's so many good moments in here, but the stick relationship I thought was amazing. Him showing up early on in his youth and training him with the bow and arrow to shoot when he's blind, and when Matt's like cheering, he's like, anyone could do it once, you know, and sort of kind of berates him for being happy. And he's like, do it again. And that moment where they're soaring over the roof, which I know Jasmine mentioned, but then whilst Stick then gets disappointed with some of his behavior slightly later, I love that Stick keeps coming back, and especially in the final moment between him and Foggy. And he grabs the coin and he said, by the way, you know, basically the coin didn't go your way. Don't, you know. And so that's how we end up with Nelson and Murdoch. But I love the fact that this relationship with Stick is almost like a father relationship. You know, it's a different father relationship, but it is there.
Yeah, and he clearly definitely feels more than just a mentor.
Yeah. But I think that was probably the part I was... I don't know that I enjoyed the most of it all, just the fact that whilst, you know, his dad did die, that Stick has kind of taken that role slightly, and whilst he stepped away, he's clearly kept an eye on him, if you know right. what I mean, yeah. figuratively. Right, I thought it might be important to talk about the legacy of this graphic novel. It came out in 1993, well, as a miniseries. I've never read it, and I constantly hear about Frank Miller and things he's done. In fact, and I'm going to have to be honest, I've never read anything, I think, by Frank Miller. And hence why we want to do this book club is, you know, me and Jasmine always said about reading things we've never read. And I'm glad, actually, that this has come about and we've read this. I when I read this, I thought the TV series has literally taken the first season from this comic, and even the point where he's dressed in black and he's got the black black sort of beanie pulled over his eyes, and it's a black costume. Charlie Cox spends most of the first season dressed like that. They didn't rush to get him in the costume, and also when they showed the flashback episode, I think in season two of Elektra, I think didn't they break into someone's house or something? And Elektra was very wild in the TV series, and this is what we had, a very wild Elektra in this graphic novel. I could see Frank Miller's fingerprints all over that Netflix show. I just wondered what your thoughts were on the legacy of this. But also, the characters that highlight in this series are some of the biggest characters that we have in modern Daredevil comics. And I know that they were created by Frank Miller, you know, so not Kingpin, obviously, Elektra and Stick, and obviously there were characters created by him, and obviously he created Bullseye as well, I think.
Did he create Typhoid and Mary?
There is a thing here. So I actually have written this down. In 1997, there was a Daredevil Deadpool annual and Typhoid Mary was revealed to be the girl at the end that he failed to save. So it's revealed that she, that girl in the end of this is actually Typhoid Mary.
Oh, wow.
Or the one that fell out of the window.
Yeah.
Or the young girl. Or no, the one he pushed out the window?
The younger or girl, was it, I think, was it Mickey? Girl.
Yeah, the issue 5? No way. Yes.
Wow. That sucks.
That's... Matt.
Yeah.
Parker Luck, man. That Parker Luck.
All right, okay, so I've looked it up. Typhoid Mary was created by Anne Nocenti or something, Nocenti, and John Romita Jr. In 1988.
Oh, okay.
So I guess that's where Frank Miller sort of retconned it a little bit. So
gave her a little bit of an origin, a connection to Matt, deeper connection to Matt. That's cool, though. Yeah. Messed up for him, but...
So I don't know whether it was him or whoever wrote the annual, but one of the two. So, but anyway, just what were your thoughts on just, I guess, the influence this has had on Dedo as a character, this graphic novel?
I don't know. I feel like he's so ingrained with the character. He did so much with the character that I don't know if we'll ever see a project involving Daredevil that doesn't feel like it's shouting out Frank Miller or was inspired by Frank Miller's works. Whether it be movie shows, games, even new comic runs, they all kind of stem back from what Frank Miller did. You know, it's all like a continuation of that. So as far as influence, I almost want to say like that's Frank Miller's character. I don't think anybody's done as much with, even though they might have tried. Like Bendis has wrote some great Daredevil stories, with like fantastic Daredevil stories. But I don't look at that as Brian Michael Bendis's character. I don't know. Yeah, it's Frank Miller's influence is all over. You know, it's hard to. It's going to be hard. I don't know if he'll ever top that. You know, he did so much for the character. But his influence is felt in everything. Even the mediocre, the mid 2003 Ben Affleck Daredevil movie. You know, you can feel Frank Miller's presence in that. Not as strongly, but it's there. And I just, you know, think it's to the testament of Frank Miller and what he did with the Daredevil character.
Yeah. What about you, Jason?
I mean, I think it's like Link said, it's always going to be this version of Daredevil that gets remade into other forms of media because that's what they've already done. Like we got this in 2003, we got the same guy in 2015, but you know, on a totally different level, but it's telling the same story. So there has to be something about this story that people are still reusing, even if they've got 60 years of history to choose from, they're still always going back to this. That says something.
Mm-hmm. What's that?
Yeah, no, I agree. I read Kevin Smith and Bendis's run, but I haven't read this. You can see the inspiration from this. And I haven't read anything much older, but kind of what I have seen in, you know, clips online and stuff, it looked like it was probably a little bit more campy, in line with what was that style. I think Frank Miller came in here and he turned his character upside down, and that's been a strong foundation for what we've seen with people like Brubaker and Bendis and you know, like you say, the movie and the TV series. So, I mean, it's amazing. I love the fact that I've now finally read this and I can see where it all connected. So, when you read these kind of things, it's always common themes that come out. And I think for me, one of the most common themes was a bit, it's one of Jasmine's favorite themes, found family type thing. Because you see it with Stick and you see it with Foggy and you see him also kind of chasing Elektra as well. But they all play aspects in what Matt's looking for in terms of family. And even when he went to Boston and he can't settle there because actually he's not really got that family support. And, you know, a bit, and he sort of links up with Foggy and they talk about their roots together. And, want to form a company together, but actually it's they want to form a, you know, a deeper rooted family kind of business. Right. I don't know. Yeah. I just wondered what your thoughts were, both of you, if you thought there was any themes there or if you agree with what I said or not. What about, I mean, Steph, what about yourself?
Man, I never really thought about the themes, but I could definitely see what you mean with, like, found family. Like, they're all different. They, you know, they feel the Stick, Foggy, Electra all kind of fill voids in Matt's personality. I'm trying to find better words for it, but. You know, Matt does have like a wild, rambunctious side to him that appeals to. He's got that the sense of justice and wanting to help others. That's Foggy, you know. With Stick, Matt is a very, you know, he while he's got a wild, rambunctious side, he is a man of like rules and being strict and rigid. And he's got that with Stick, you know. He's got discipline with Stick. So you know, I think that's interesting. You know, it is, I do see the found family thing, but it's, they're almost like different aspects of Matt's personality at the same time.
Yeah. Oh, I like that. I like that. Different aspects of his personality. I think it's a lot of him coming to terms with what justice actually is. Whereas like,
that's true as well.
Yeah, with Batman, it's always like vengeance. Like, I am vengeance. I am the knight. Whereas with Daredevil, it's very much like, you're bad. Like, it's not necessarily always about revenge. Like, he got his revenge for what happened to his father. But like he said, the reason he could not leave New York was because that's home. And right. I think that is very telling of like, you're leaving a, well, like he was on track to be high up in that firm in Boston. He was doing well for himself. And he went home, and then he was just like, no, nah, Boston ain't it. Like, I don't so I think, yes, I do think the found family. And, like, even Mickey, too. Like, him going back to the gym and finding, like, a stray kid, like, hanging out in the gym. Like, that's definitely, like, the definition of found family. But I really feel like he has this very, I mean, sometimes he does some questionable things. But he also recognizes that he does questionable things. But, like, he has this really strict sense of, do right by good people. And so like, I think that is also one of his biggest themes is like, I can see that these awful people are taking advantage of everyone else. And like, I have these abilities. So I'm going to use that to help the people. Whereas I feel like a lot of times with Batman, it's very much like, I'm going to stop the criminals. And Matt Murdock is like, I'm going to help the victims.
Right.
So, it's same path essentially, but like they're both going about it in two very different ways. So
yeah that's a good point. Like Matt's, he's usually worried about the outcome of these victims, and actually like Batman's just like, yo, I stopped the criminals, what else do you want me to do, you know, like do the other part. But yeah, that is a distinct contrast in their character and how they like they do the same thing, but they just go about it, you know, it's slightly different ways.
Yeah, that's a difference that money makes, because Bruce Wayne comes from money, so he's always like stop the bad guy, whereas the guy who didn't come from money is like help the people.
Right.
I think that also has a play in it as well.
I do like what you said though about throughout the story, him identifying what justice looks like, and I don't know, he got justice, but actually did he really get justice in himself? Because he still carried on looking for what the right path was, and yeah, I don't know, yeah, I hadn't thought about that as well, but yeah, that's a good point. So just thought I'd go around the virtual room, and crazy that we've almost talked about this for over almost an hour. Just final thoughts on this graphic novel. Just yeah, Jasmine, actually, what are your thoughts? First time reading Daredevil, what's your thoughts on this?
Okay, so first time reading like this definitive Daredevil story, right? It makes me hate that 2003 movie so much more. Like because this was so good. And so like when I came into this story, in my mind, I'm like, I mean, I know the story, right? Like I've seen the movie, I've seen the Netflix series, like I get it. But this story had so much more to it than even the Netflix series. And the Netflix series, the first season of Daredevil is phenomenal. It is phenomenal television. I'm not gonna accept any other response to that. But like this book really surprised me in A, how much it pulled me in, and B, just like how good it actually was. And like, I've spent all of this time before 2015 thinking that Daredevil is like this fourth, fifth rate character that is just like clumsy, bumbling idiot. And it's like, that is completely wrong. Like that 2003 film is so not indicative of the
Yes.
character that is Daredevil. And so I am so glad that I read this, because like, this guy's a badass. Like, I would definitely read more Daredevil stuff, because like, he's just, to me, he was so cool, because like, he's a kid, but he's also like wild and like has a like rebellious streak. He's not just this white collar, blue collar lawyer that like plays by the book, and that like, that's not him at all. Like, there's so much more to the character of Matt Murdock than what we have gotten in that 2003 movie. So I'm very glad that we read this, because it almost erases the awfulness of that film and like gives a whole fresh perspective on the character.
What about you, Lane?
Yeah, man. I'm just, that's well said by Jazz. I'm just gonna keep saying, like, this is one of those comics that if you're a comic reader, it's like, yeah, this is why I read comics, you know, like just it makes you appreciate it, just the medium. If you're not a comic reader, I think this is something that would get people into comics, you know. They'd be like, oh, this is
Yes.
badass. It's kind of like read a movie almost, you know,
Yeah.
like it's perfect on it's firing all in all cylinders in all aspects, and just it's the standard. It's the standard for greatness, especially when it comes to superhero comics, and of course when it comes to Daredevil. I can't recommend it enough. It's great.
Yeah, I
I'm glad you said
agree with
that
you.
too, though, about like, because point of entry for comics is always so difficult for people who don't read comics. But this is a
Yes.
really great jumping in point, because it literally gives you from the day he got the ability to like the day he put on the suit. So I think it is a really good kind of, oh, you've never read this? Like, if you want to see if you like superhero comics, like, start here. Like, I think this is really easy to give to someone that's like, I don't know. Do I want to read Batman? Do I want to read Superman? Do I want to read Captain America? Like, start with Daredevil. Then we'll see.
This kind of came out of we obviously we did Elektra and the Daredevil movie, and next week we're going to jump into a different theme of movies. And I thought about putting something between the two to break it up, and that's kind of what we said about doing the book club again. So the idea of the book club was always for me and Jasmine to go back and look at essential graphic novels, because for one reason or another, there's a whole load of comics and graphic novels that are on loads of people's top tens and top 20 graphic novels of all time, or and you hear about runs that people have done that again I've not read. And I don't even think I put this run on our essential list that I first wrote for us to work our way around. And because we did the Daredevil movie in Elektra, I said to Jasmine, actually, let's do this, because I actually did have to Google and work out what a good essential novel would be. And quite a few came up, if I'm honest. And but this one was a good entry point for getting into to Daredevil, when I felt linked really well with following our two movie reviews. And like I say, I've never read this, and I've never read anything by Frank Miller, and I know that's probably going to offend a lot of people. And but I've walked out of here thinking, I want more. I would happily read more stuff by Frank Miller. And
Absolutely.
I want to, and I know his Daredevil run is much bigger than this, so I'm really keen to go and carry on. And I know he obviously did that Elektra, is it Assassin's story as well? And I think that was him as well. But that, and I always see that cover around. And basically, I really enjoyed this. This is like Link said, to summarize it, it's why I read comics, things like this. And when I read this, I read the bulk of this last night before I went to bed, and then I finished it off this morning, up this evening. And I was just like, this is amazing. I'm really enjoying it. It's actually really easy to read. Like, I really get annoyed when you get creators that just overly narrate, and it's just becomes a chore. Like, I don't even mind long narration when it's easy to read and it flows well. Frank Miller's text is so easy to digest, and And I love the fact that some pages might be full of his text, while other pages there might be one or two boxes, and he trusts the relationship he has. And I just think that the relationship between the artist and the writer here is golden. Like, it's a gold standard here, and you can see how well they work together. And it's obviously back in '93. There was no Zooms or anything like that. I'd love to know what the creative process was when they put this together.
Picking up the phone. Hey, man, I'm looking at the page that you Xeroxed over. Because, like, so at the end of the book, they have, like, a script, like, with handwritten notes and everything inside of it. That was so cool. So, like, when I interned at New Line Cinema, there were lots of spec scripts for films that hadn't been done yet. And I remember reading the script for Alpha Dog, which was, like, a Justin Timberlake movie from way back in, like, 2008. The movie was terrible, but that script was so good. And like when I saw the movie, I was like, I don't understand how why are you so different? Like, so I think there's something so special about reading a script as well. And then for that script to translate the way that you wanted it to the medium itself, that was really cool. So I really enjoyed like all of the extra stuff that they put at the back of the book as well.
You kind of, I got to go back and rewatch Alpha Dog. I was a young man when I saw it. I'm a Justin Timberlake fan, so that might have, my bias that might have played into that. But dang, I didn't know Alpha Dog was that bad.
I've never seen Alpha Dog. So
I think, I read the script first and I was like, damn, this is a really, really good script. And then when the movie finally came out, I was like, oh, this is not, not at all what I expected.
But no, in summary, I'm going to be honest, I love this. I would read it again. And I think it's one of these ones I could happily recommend to people that know nothing about Daredevil or even are unsure about comics. Like Fable used to be like one of my recommendations for years. You know, the Bill William, what's his name? Williamson or William, whatever his name is. The Fable.
Everybody's familiar with those characters.
Yeah, like the Vertigo run. I recommended that for years to people that were like, no, comics are just superheroes. And but this comic, I would say, it's not even a superhero origin story. This is the origin story of Matt Murdock. I know eventually it ends with Daredevil, but this is a Matt Murdock story. So,
awesome.
Yeah. Right. Let's start to bring things to a close. I know we've talked a while. I think all three of us loved it, which is just amazing. Steph, what have you got going on? What's coming up for you?
Every Tuesday over at Dr. Doom's Fan Club on YouTube, our buddy Stu and I talk about comics pretty much. Right now we're going over we're covering like the 2000s of Marvel. That's been our theme and significant runs of that era. We just had John's Comics with Kids on this past Tuesday. That was really fun episode, and we talked about Brian Michael Bendis's his Avengers Disassembled and the first two arcs of couple years on Avengers, the new Avengers.
I love that run.
If you we'll have to get you on if you want to talk about some of that stuff, man. we just like to geek out, and hopefully along the lines if in that conversation, if you can get some information or something out of it, then that's cool. But we just share our love for comics and creators and storylines and all that stuff. But it's Tuesdays at 9 p.m. on YouTube at Dr. Doom's Fan Club.
Amazing. And a question for you, Steph. Is there any thing that you've read during 2024 that you think other people should read? Like anything that you think is sort of essential?
Like that's coming out now? Like
that you've read already.
Wow.
Maybe the last 12 months, because I know it's not far into the
year. I don't know if it's as essential as this one, but I recently reread Tom King's, he did a 12-issue Vision series in 2015. Mm-hmm. And I thought that I hadn't read it since it came out, and I read that 2 weeks ago, and I still enjoyed it. It's a unique book. It almost feels like an indie book in the Marvel universe. And I think writing for someone like the Vision would be a kind of difficult to do to begin with, because it's like, how do you put yourself in the shoes of synthetic man? You know, I don't know what it feels like synthetic, but I think Tom King did an interesting job. Like, Vision's always someone who's always kind of like wanted to be more human, I guess, and he's tried to have a family, but in this series he gets a family. So it was like, there's like this, it's got like a murder mystery vibe to it. I won't say too much, but it was cool. It was cool.
Mm-hmm. I've heard actually about that series. Really weirdly, just before we wrap up, I started to read this Tom King.
Nice.
I'm 2 issues in. I'll be honest, it is quite wordy. So I will happily try Vision at some point. So, right, coming up on Geeks Unleashed, the next book club won't be too far away. We're going to do it more regularly, but we'll have to wait and see what that'll be. However, next week we'll be back for our normal weekly show as we begin the longest theme I think we've ever run on Geeks Unleashed. So, Jasmine, do you think we should share, or do you think they should wait?
I mean, you can give them a little snippet of the theme song, I think.
I can't sing that theme song.
Okay, okay. We'll give you guys a hint. It's going to be very recognizable, but it's...
All right, okay, yeah. But it's the real life, not the animated. So, right, it's going to be a great one to start with, if I'm honest.
It's going to be long. We're running all the way up to Deadpool 3.
Nice.
Okay, so you're going to actually join us for that one, aren't you, next week?
X-Men?
No, the one we're doing next week.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Yeah. right, okay. So you can follow us on social media. We're everywhere. Instagram, Facebook, and X.
That still sounds so weird to say.
Oh, no, I know. I normally say Twitter, but maybe I say X now.
Yeah. And then you can get this podcast wherever you get your podcast. Google, Podbean, Apple, Spotify. We are everywhere. So please leave us a 5-star review and tell your geeky friends.
Thank you for listening.
Good journey.